Welcome to the 24th episode of The Whistleblowers. I am Luke DeCock, News and Observer sports columnist, and John Clockerty, the Hall of Fame official, is here as always. I don't know if we can top episode 23, John. I don't know if anyone else enjoyed it, but I think that was the most fun we ever had recording one of these.
We did. There was a lot of time in between from 22 to 23, so we had a lot of material, but it was a good session, and I think the audience should have enjoyed it. It was a lot of good information. I have a guy that I have coffee with, and he's not a regular listener, Luke, but he listened to it. He says, "Oh my God, John, you know so much about basketball." And it kind of surprised me because that's all I've been doing for the last 45 years.
Did this guy just meet you?
No. But he, you know, we don't talk basketball. We talk more golf when I get up with him.
Well, speaking of the history of basketball, we're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, less than 24 hours after we almost had the first chair thrown since Bobby Knight in Puerto Rico. The Kansas-Kansas State brawl was ugly. Silvio De Silva has been suspended indefinitely just now. That'll be old news by the time anyone listens to this. In a situation like that, when all hell breaks loose, what's the official's role there? Like, what are you supposed to be doing?
Well, you're hoping that you can get some assistance from the coaches because the coaches are so important in keeping the players under control. I don't know the whole story, Luke, obviously, unless you're there, but I think it took the coaches by surprise because anytime you have one of those situations happen, coaches is responsible to make sure that everybody that's on the bench stays on the bench. He turns around and says, "You stay right here and let the referees and the head coach get out there and get control of the situation." And once they see, the coaches see what's going on, and then they get out there and try to break up the unfortunate thing. And I will say, Luke, I've been involved in one of those as a referee, and it's everybody's nightmare. It's the coach's nightmare. It's the official's nightmare. It's the league's nightmare. Everybody's going to be looked at. I mean, it's a black eye on the league, I believe, even though they have no fault in it. They're on prime time with a big-time game, and this ends like that, and people will point the finger, but it's so unfortunate. And then I'm not sure. I know how they adjudicated it. I'm not sure it was correct. And again, John Higgins and Keith Kimble, and I'm losing my thought here on the third one, but they're all good referees, and they did the best they could. But here's my point on that, Luke. When they got everything separated and everything quieted down, John Higgins was the referee, and he sent word that he needed both teams out there for the five guys that were on the floor when the fight started. He needed five from both teams. And then they shot one free throw with 1/10 of a second. And there's two parts in the book. You have to finish the game. You have to complete the game statistically. That is in the book. And that's all about betting line. Okay. But there's also a part in the book that the official has elastic power that if he thinks a game or a situation is unmanageable, and I don't know if that's the right words, if it's chaotic and it's unmanageable, then you can suspend play. And I thought the prudent thing to do would have been not bringing them out, because you bring them out and Kansas State's going to shoot a free throw with students still in the stands, and you might be asking for problems when you've just got something under control. Next thing you know, you got students there screaming and hollering at the Kansas State player shooting a free throw. So, in my opinion, if I was the referee, and it's been a long time since I would have taken the responsibility and said, this is not a good situation to bring these players out here. But I will tell you, it's going to be hard to criticize John Higgins and his crew because they went by the book and they said, we have to end this game. And there was a second or a fraction of a second remaining. So they followed the rule book.
Sure. You mentioned you were in a brawl like this. When was that?
Yeah, I had Georgia, Florida. And Norm Sloan was coaching at Florida. U Durham was at Georgia. And they got into a fist fight. And it was a brawl that was not at the end of the game, but during the game, Vernon Maxwell.
Yeah, that's the right.
Vernon Maxwell. Yeah. And there's some kids jumping Joe Ward from Georgia. They're pounding on each other and they're fighting. And we're trying to get control of the game. And we did, and then we finally, it was before everybody got teed up, but benches cleared. And that's why when I started this, I said, everybody is having to deal with such a terrible situation. Again, I watched Bill Self's post game, and a credit to him. He says, I can't speak for Kansas State, but we're responsible. We're responsible for this happening. He said, they also may be responsible, but we're taking control of this situation. We're responsible. And he suspended the kid. But in my opinion, it's far from over.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear that this is going to have some longer-reaching fallout. I mean, this, you know, Kansas to me is one of the three or four teams that has the best chance to win a national title. This could severely impact those chances. You lose DeSilva, you know, you may have some other disciplinary actions. That's not insignificant. Potentially not insignificant.
Look, of course, he's such a good player. I mean, he's one of the kids that I think that, I read where he got suspended or was ineligible last year, and the university appealed his suspension and got him back in the lineup this year. He must be, I don't watch Kansas, but they're number three in the country or number two. They're, like you said, they're probably odds on favor of being one of the four teams remaining. And this is going to be a setback. I think the league could take hold of this and maybe suspend some other players that have been involved in the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's late in the game and you've got most, you know, DeSilva's really the only rotation regular on the court just because that's the way their depth works out. But, you know, players leaving the bench, you know, whatever happened there, leaving the handshake line in this case, that's potentially an area where you could see the Big 12 step in. It was
they were all ejected. Every one of those players were ejected, but that does not carry over. They do not lose the following game. If they had been involved in the fight and been ejected like the player was, then they would lose the next game. But I see a lot of what's going on out there, and certainly I refereed in a time that nobody, they weren't all angels either. And when I was supervisor, they weren't all angels teams, but this kid blocks a shot and he has to stand over and taunt a kid after he blocks a shot. And there's what, I mean, the kid's going to respond to being taunted. And I just got such a bad taste for some of the stuff that's happening.
And the history of this goes back really to the start of the year when Monmouth was at Kansas. Monmouth is losing badly to Kansas. Kansas is dribbling out the clock, and a Monmouth player stole the ball from the surprised Kansas player and went down and threw in a layup. And everyone kind of laughed, like, ha-ha, you know, little Monmouth not going down without a fight. And it was kind of a chuckle. But when Kansas State did the same thing to Kansas...
That was a little different.
The fists were flying.
You know, I didn't know that, but Maybe that certainly was part of Kansas not allowing that to happen a second time, and making things a little bit revengier.
It's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Yeah. You know, let me give you the two sidebars, one of the sidebars on that. Number one, if he hits anybody with that chair, then now you've got a criminal possible, somebody's going to, and the from what I understand, the first and second row were for a disability and handicap. And there's a picture, when you look at it, the one girl is falling all over. Somebody's trying to help her get out of the way. All of this enters into, let's look at this thing play by play and situation by situation. What if somebody had gotten hurt? I mean, not sure. Only the kid with the chair going to hit another kid, thank God this assistant coach saved him, but some of those fans couldn't get out of the way.
Yeah, and I talked with Joey Doster, an old friend who's the longtime head of security for game day security for basketball at Duke and NC State, and recently became head of security for PNC Arena. And I just sort of asked him, there's a in the video, there's a yellow jacketed security guard holding back kind of three Kansas State players. And I asked him what security's role is in that situation. And he said, security's primary role is to keep the fans separated from the fight, to kind of keep the fight away from the fans. And it's up to the officials and coaches to deal with the players. That what you want to do as a security guard is kind of create a barrier around it. You don't want to get in there breaking up the fight. But you want to make sure fans don't...
You want to protect the fans.
Correct.
Yeah, sure.
And I said, so was this security guard out of his lane? And he said, no, right there. He's just trying to keep anyone from entering the fray. Yeah. And in that case, it just happened to be a Kansas State player or two. But it's ugly stuff. And I wouldn't say we've seen more or less of it in recent years. These things happen and they flare up. You know, the Cincinnati Xavier game a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It occasionally happens between rivals. We haven't seen it around here where we are maybe since Art Heyman or...
Been a long time.
Yeah.
And certainly I'm not naive. I know that next week it could break out again, or you can go back and find records of where there's been bad fights in ACC, SEC, Big East. When I was refereeing the Big East, we used to call that, Saturday night at the fights, because something was going to happen if Georgetown was playing Syracuse or... all those teams had tough characters, and that's the way they wanted to play.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just I think ultimately these coaches I think Bill Self. I've had some of his games when he was at Illinois, and I think they're all try to do the best they can, but sometimes you just can't control these kids when emotions are real high, So it's too easy for me to point the finger who's responsible and who should have done a better job. I don't know.
Let's switch to someone else whose emotions were high. Mike Krzyzewski, after the loss to Louisville, felt that the game was allowed to be too physical. Direct quote, "Freedom of movement was not alive and well tonight." He compared it to an early 90s Bulls-Pistons game. Now, putting aside the irony of a Duke coach complaining about the game being too physical, and also the fact that Duke shot more free throws than Louisville. Although you and I both know that that's not always necessarily the best representation of the officiating. And in this case, Louisville essentially won that game by building an early lead that Duke was never able to overcome with sort of live ball turnovers. And I think you would argue, if you were going to take Krzyzewski's side, that Louisville was allowed to sort of hack and whack and pick at the ball and got a bunch of easy layups and runouts doing that and then went from there. But Krzyzewski clearly unhappy with the physicality of the game. You know, that being said, there's no question Louisville was the better team. Louisville was the tougher team mentally and physically. There's always hard to get around that fact that if the game was too physical, then why couldn't your team handle it? But it does tie back into what we talked about in our last episode. This is a line of sort of the Jay Billis argument of that they've stopped policing the physicality of the game. Billis's argument was they're too caught up in other stuff. Kay's argument seems to be they just don't care. what was your thoughts about what he said and that game?
Yeah. Well, a couple things. I'm going to ask you, because you were hands-on and you were at the game, and I'm not putting you on a spot, but I watched it on television. I watched all the way to the end, and it took me by surprise that Coach K took the avenue that the game was too physical, because I watched the entire game, and again, I was not there like you were, but you and I do stay in communication on a lot of games, and I never felt that that game was overly physical. You don't get the same feel when you're sitting on your couch, but you were there, and at no time that we exchanged some text messages, we talked about a couple of things, but we never talked about how physical the game was.
No.
And not only that, I'm not buying any of it. That I'm not buying.
You wound up to that.
Yeah, I am not buying any of it, that the game was too physical. And I say that for a couple reasons. One, I have some experience when coaches lose and they look to, for some reasons. But I'm saying this not only because Coach K. I never heard when Coach Krzyzewski had experienced teams with older kids that were big and strong ever call me about physical play. And I've had a Hall of Fame coach tell me that when he has upperclassmen that have been in the program, have been played in these type of games, he didn't care how physical it was. In fact, he was hoped the game would be physical. But now, when the tables turn, and like I said, this Hall of Fame coach, but when I got young kids that are just coming into their own, I would prefer a game that's not so physical. And I think Krzyzewski may be in a situation where he's trying to send a message. He knows he's going to see those three referees again. I may over-analyzing this thing, but he's going to see Ron Groover. He's going to see John Gaffney, and he's going to see whoever the third one was. He's going to see them again. And when he does...
Jamie Lucky.
All three, Gaffney, Groover, and Lucky, are Final Four referees. They know if the game got too physical, what we need to do to get it back, okay? So they weren't Larry Moe and Curley. They are experienced referees. So Luke, I'm thinking he knows he's going to see these three guys now, maybe in the NCAA. So maybe there's a subtle little message that he's trying to get out there. But for him to say, oh, freedom of movement, I called before our podcast. I reached out to three guys, all that you know. And I says, listen, I says, I may be missing something, but you're all aware of what Krzyzewski said and what Bill has said. I says, you see the same stuff I see. I says, have you taken a step back and allowed? And all three said, absolutely not. And here's why they said. They said, we get stuff from Kersey, from Johnny Cal, from J.D. Collins, that we better toe the rope or we're not going to the NCAAs. And if he sees us being lax and enforcing freedom of movement, all three of them are going to come at us. And therefore, I don't think that... My argument last week was with Jay Billis. My argument with this week is with Coach K.
It's like old times, isn't it?
Yeah.
Arguing with K?
Yes. Only when he loses.
Right.
Only when he loses.
Here's my theory, John, and I'm obviously not an official or on that side of the aisle. Immediately after K finished talking about freedom of movement, he switched gears before anyone asked a question and started talking about how he doesn't make excuses and he doesn't throw his team under the bus. A lot of people interpreted the second one as a shot at Roy. I don't think it was.
I was going to ask you that.
I don't think it was. I think what it was K realized his whole rant about physicality made it sound like A, he was making excuses, and B, he was throwing his team under the bus for being soft. And I think he might have realized in midstream,
mm-hmm,
that he had done that and started overcorrecting by insisting before anyone could ask him anything that he didn't make excuses for his team and he didn't throw his team under the bus. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I don't think it was a shot at Roy. I think Kay was up in his feels at that point and, you know, kind of
wanted to make sure that nobody was interpreting that he was trying to nail Carolina.
Yeah, people jump to that naturally. I don't think that was anywhere on his mind at that point. I think he was out over his skis a little bit with the physicality stuff and was trying to reel it back in. The reality is, as I said earlier, Louisville was a better team that day. Louisville was a tougher team that day, mentally and physically. And Louisville deserved to win. And Duke did not play very well at Clemson, did not play very well at home against Louisville, played very well at home against Miami and blew the doors off the Hurricanes, which is what you see from a young team, right, which Duke essentially is. Kay has veterans, but he kind of rotates them through one or two spots. For the most part, he's relying on kids. And that's, you know, unless those kids are super talented, which he's had super talented kids, this isn't that kind of group.
Right.
You know, Vernon Carey wasn't even on the floor at the end of the Louisville game, which is a basketball debate of a different color. But I think...
Well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Let me go back to... Do you think maybe... I understand what you're saying about... he's not trying to throw Roy or what Roy said under the bus. Do you think there's any validity that he may be saying, you know, my team is young, my team's not as strong, my team's not as physical, and sending a message that going forward, we need a game called closer than it was against that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's always trying to play things one step ahead, and he went in with the intention of making these very public comments about the physicality of the game, and then realized that perhaps he'd gotten caught up in the moment and gone a bit too far and tried to reel it back in, realizing that someone could legitimately accuse him of A, making excuses for his team, and B, you know, throwing his team under the bus for being soft. So I think, you know, these coaches are humans.
Yeah.
And they're emotional, especially after a loss. So I think he came out with the intention of saying one thing, maybe got a little too deep into that, and then tried to reel things back. The reality is, Louisville didn't win that game because of the officiating. The argument you can make that Louisville did win that game because of the officiating was that they were able to get those steals early and force those turnovers early because they were bumping cutters and they were reaching in and they were getting away with it. The counter argument to that is Duke had five shots. Duke had five shots down three and didn't convert any of them. So, you know, if Duke ends up hitting two of those shots and wins, does Kay go into the press conference complaining about physicality? No, what he says is, that was a man's game.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Exactly.
That's the ACC in January. You asked me what I saw.
No, that's exactly.
What I saw was a January ACC game. You asked me what I saw about 20 minutes ago and then kept talking. So now I'm answering your question 20 minutes later. No. I saw a January game between two upper echelon ACC teams, two of the three best teams in the league, and it was in every way what I expected from that regard.
You know, every coach has his own different take and what he wants to say. And I'm just going to I refereed Leonard Hamilton when I was an active referee. And I had him for 11 years as a supervisor. And if he thought the game was too physical, Leonard Hamilton's take would be, to me, then my team needs to step up and be physical.
No one's going to out-tough us.
That's right. Leonard Hamilton wouldn't say, I need the referees to call it closer. He says, I need to make my team to play that way. And that's why I just think that when coaches have good, solid, big, strong kids, did I ever hear, what was the big center that won the championship game just 4 years ago, Stahursky or something like that for Duke? He was the big center.
Jahlil Okafor?
No, it was even before him. They won the national championship.
Brian Zubek.
Zubek. I never heard from Duke when Brian Zubek and that group was playing.
Okay. Brian Zubek, Lance Thomas.
Yeah, you know, there was no calls about the
Kyle
game.
Kyle Singler flying into the press row.
Yeah, I never heard that the game was being too physical. But What'd you call him?
Stokerski?
Whatever. I can't remember these players. I got 1,000 of them. But anyway, you get my point.
Yes. Let's talk about another coach everyone loves. John Calipari at Arkansas over the last weekend.
Yeah.
Got teed up and then said that something that you're not allowed to say to referees and got teed up again and tossed. So, two questions for you, John. The first question is, is the word the same in basketball as it is in baseball that you can't say to the official? And two, how come no one from the Kentucky bench came and held Calipari back? One of the referees had to do it.
Well, you know, I try to do a little legwork before we do our podcast. And Jerry Tipton, who writes, who is a beat writer for the Lexington paper, called me. He actually has called me a number of times. And he asked me if I had seen Calipari. And he says, does those both officials teeing him up at the same time, does that constitute as two technicals? I said, no, it doesn't. I said, they did a baseball thing and they heaved-hoed him. So he must have said something that that he shouldn't have. But that wasn't two technicals. But I asked him and he says that there was in the press conference, they asked the assistant coach who took the lead when Calipari got tossed, why did Calipari tell you, I'm going to get involved here, don't bother grabbing hold of me? And they says, absolutely not. I says, he went down there and we just didn't go after him. And
I mean, come get your boy.
But, you know,
you can't leave him hanging out there like that unless you want him tossed.
And they did. And his answer was no. There was no talk about, I'm going to go down there. I'm going to say my piece.
I mean, he wasn't even across the half court line.
He was 10 steps
from the bench.
Yeah. No
players, no coaches, not even an equipment manager or trainer. They're just letting him out there sink or swim.
At that point in time, there was 12 more fouls called against Kentucky than there was against Arkansas. So that probably got him all upset, and then he just had to let him know. But he said something, and they asked him, was that a kind of a premeditated thing? They asked him in the press conference, were you so upset that you were going to get technicals even if it costs you getting tough? He said, no. He said, I thought I got two technicals right back to back. And he didn't. That's
how,
one tech.
How would a coach ask you when a coach wanted a tech? Because coaches want techs.
No.
How would they let you know?
Yeah, they'd get up next to you and says, John, do not throw me out, but I'm going to scream and yell. He says, because I got to get these guys moving, and I'm going to get a technical. Then you know that once he gets it, he's gotten it because he wanted it, and then let's go back to business. But it doesn't happen often.
And then you get booed.
Oh, you get booed. I'll tell you something. Did you see the end of the Pitt-Louisville game where the kid tipped the ball in and got called for a foul, Mike Stevens? So my son Tim has the next Pitt game, and he has it. And Pitt's playing.
Did he get snowed in, by the way?
He did not get snowed in, but he has the first foul. And the first foul against Pitt. And I warned him, no matter how clear it is, get ready. And, of course, everybody was still festering over the last one. So he called it. And I says, Tim, it might have been the easiest call you had the whole game. And he got booed, and Capel got upset. I said, sometimes you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah.
Did you ever have a coach ask for a technical, and then he went so overboard you had to toss him?
No. If he starts going overboard, I or whoever would say, listen, you asked for one, okay, and I gave you that. You're going to earn the next one if I have to toss you. The officials don't really want to toss a coach. It's seldom that Luke, we can talk about a lot of things. Dean Smith should have never gotten thrown out of the national championship or semi. Should have never gotten thrown out. And they let Peter Pavia stand there Peter had gotten a got him earlier in the game, a technical, and then he started on Peter later, and rather than go over and says, "Peter, get across the floor, let me stay over here," they let Peter Pavia stay there, and Dean just kept chirping at him. Next thing you know, we got a coach getting thrown out of a semifinal game. It should have never happened.
Did you ever really enjoy whacking a guy?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have to sometimes, you have to find out what your fellow referee is doing to one team, and if the other coach even shows signs of doing the same thing, you need to take care of that. And my only thought was I had a game where a guy named Larry Limbo had teed up Rolly Massimino, and Rolly deserved that technical. And then Larry Limbo ran past Jim Calhoun shortly after that, and Calhoun was just as bad as Rolly Massimino, and Larry Limbo ran by him, didn't do anything. I said, "Well, we can't have that." And so I
walked from across the court, long range sniper tech.
I had to get Calhoun because Larry just a minute or two earlier got Rolly Massimino. I said, "That's not fair." So I got Calhoun.
I remember there was an ACC. You were supervising then. There was an ACC tournament game in Greensboro, where Kay was on Brian Dorsey pretty hard, and Roger Ayers came from like the other end of the court.
Roger did?
And whacked Kay because he'd had enough of Kay. On Dorsey was taking it. You know, Dorsey just was.
Yeah, Dorsey.
He was fine. And Ayers came from across the court and was bam.
Yeah.
Bam. ACC tournament game.
Worst technical foul I've ever seen.
Was it in Greensboro in an ACC tournament game?
Carl Hess teed up Mark Godfrey.
Oh, when he was on double secret probation.
Yeah, it was Reynolds. It wasn't over, and
against Wofford,
and he teed Mark up for basically nothing. And it was the first game. Paul Brazo and I, these are secrets that I can leave out right now. Paul and I decided we need to get Carl back in the mix. Okay, we kept him away from state. So we say, here's a nice game. We can put him in this game.
So hold on. Let me add some context here, because I love this story and I know where you're going. So Carl Hess had teed up Tom Gugliotta and Chris Corciani sitting behind the scorer's table at PNC. So the previous season or 2 years earlier?
No, it was just two years.
Previous
maybe.
Season.
Yeah.
And then Carl Hess gets suspended. The officials show up at the ACC tournament for the first game with KH stickers on their shoes.
Right, right.
So there was months of this crap storm going on. So it was a year, I think, you kept Carl away from NC State.
At least a year, yeah.
Okay, so Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon game in Reynolds against Wofford. Nice, quiet spot. You guys were like, let's get Carl back in the mix.
And we had talked about scheduling him back into the mix because you're not allowed to blackball.
Right,
referee.
Right.
That's
it. Like you had to go to Arkansas.
Yeah, that's right. I had to go to Arkansas. Good point. So, and Paul was right. Paul Brazo. He said, let's pick a game out. Let's get him back where it can't be a big time game or something like this. So, like you said, we find a game that I think State's going to beat Wofford handedly.
Yeah, Mike Young might add something to say to you about that.
Yeah, bad mistake on both our parts. So, Paul and I both go to the game. And nothing's going on. I mean, we're in the first minutes. When I say first minutes, we haven't gotten to the 4 minute timeout yet. And Mark says something from his bench because Paul and I are sitting on the end line, and Mark said something about the kid traveling up at the other end, Wofford kid. Carl, that guy's traveling. A transition and zap. He's hit.
Bam.
Hit him. I looked at Paul. I said, Paul, we have just killed ourselves. Just killed ourselves. He looked at me. He says, this is absolutely, but he put another word in there that I'm not going to say. He says, this is unbelievable. So I never go down at halftime. And Paul says, we're going down. I said, I don't ever go in. He said, we're going down. I go down. He said, John, you take control of it. I says, I will. So I says, Carl, I need to know why you... He was arguing about a travel call. I says, Carl, I'm going to tell you something. Every game you have, some coach is going to ask you about travel. about 3 seconds, about over the back. I said, that's what...
Carrying. Their point guard's carrying the ball.
He's carrying. I said, that's what coaches do. I says, and you hit Mark Godfrey? I said, do you understand what that guy, and I pointed to Paul Brazza, he and I did to get you back in the mix on this, and then you just, you know, shot us right between the eyes. I just, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, how in the world could, you know, but anyway, we could have, if everything worked out, it would have been fine, but it didn't work out. It was what it was.
But you kept Carl around.
We didn't fire him, but eventually we had to.
Right. I mean, he ended up getting himself fired for his comments to the Wake trustee.
Yeah.
Which we've gone into in detail. But, well.
Well, I asked Paul, you know, I'm sure he and I had some conversation. What do we do? And I don't think we did anything except keep him away from state again.
The worst technical I ever saw was in an ACC tournament game in Greensboro.
Wiping the floor up?
Yeah, Larry Rose, the state manager, wiping the floor in the state Maryland game.
I wasn't...
you see that 3 times a game, 4 times a game.
Well, first of all, they should be out there wiping it, make sure nobody gets hurt, slip. And...
I don't know that state's beating Maryland anyway because John Gilchrist was... in fuego. I mean, he was on fire that whole tournament. I mean, he was great. And State didn't have Scooter Sherrill. They weren't at full strength. But that technical was clearly a turning point in the game. And it was bizarro world stuff. Bizarro world. Another technical foul. This is the technical foul edition of this podcast. The State-Virginia game this week. DJ Funderburk and Cafaro. I can't remember his first name. Francisco, I think. For Virginia, got offsetting techs. And really, watching it live or even the replays, all you could see was Cafaro elbowing Funderburk in the small of the back, which was sort of the precipitating incident. Referees spent a long time at the monitor, ended up with offsetting techs. After the game, someone found a video clip that showed Funderburk grabbing Cafaro's bandaged thumb.
Before he got hit in the back?
Yeah, and then that was Cafaro's reaction. And apparently, according to the scuttlebutt, Funderburk had been warned not to do that.
Ooh.
So my question for you is I wasn't aware. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I wasn't aware that grabbing at an injured player's injured limb was grounds for a technical.
Oh, it absolutely is. But in this particular case, no. To answer your question, Luke, absolutely. You can't. If a guy has something on his wrist or his thumb, you can't go after an injured player where you think, you know, I might aggravate that injury. That's an unsporting act, actually. But one of the things I would say is, you know, I wonder, and I'm not as up to date as I. Let's say that Funderburk grabbed his thumb at some point at the 420 mark, and now. Shortly after that, at the 5:10 mark, or even later, the kid from Virginia elbows him in the back. And he says, I elbowed him in the back because he grabbed my thumb at the 4:20.
So they're mark. Not in the same
They're not in the
clip.
Same sequence. So I'm not sure you can go back and look at that monitor and say, sure enough, that kid did do that.
Yeah.
And then come back and get Funderburk for grabbing his thumb.
In this case, it was all... Right in the same video sequence.
Yeah, then you can do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's just say that the kid from Virginia says, go look at it. I'm telling you, he grabbed my thumb.
All you can do is kind of shrug.
And go to Funderburk and say, you know, where what you did.
This is why, now in the NCAA tournament, when something like this happens, the U.S. Basketball Writers Association and the NCAA work together to send a pool reporter to the referee's room and one reporter to get a comment. We don't have that in the ACC. But last night, it would have been really helpful for a USBWA member to go into that room with whoever, the Virginia or NC State, or if there's an ACC official there, SID, and ask, can you explain the double technical, the offsetting technicals? And then all the official has to do is say, everyone saw the elbow, that was obvious, that was clearly a, whatever we used to call it, flagrant one. Funderburk grabbed his injured thumb previous to that precipitated the incident. He'd been warned not to. they were, we saw it on the video, those are offsetting technicals. And then there's no story, no complaint. Right. And I don't know after the game if State was complaining about it. I think people were basically saying DJ was not very smart to have done it.
I can't believe that.
But we have that in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And that's great. I remember, I want to say it was Nebraska. I think it was Tim Miles got thrown out of an NCAA tournament game in San Antonio by
Carl Hess. Yeah.
And I think it was Eric Prisbell from USA Today was the pool reporter assigned. Mm-hmm. And he went to the officials room and got an explanation. It's really helpful because then there's no mystery.
Sure.
And I've been the assigned pool reporter at NCAA sites. I've never had to do it, but, you know, I've served in that role.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why we don't have that for conference games, because we, in a conference game.
I think we do.
Well, we've never been able to get it done.
Oh, Luke, I think there is something in place that if there is a situation that involves an interpretation of the rules, one reporter is allowed to go in there and get an official interpretation. It has nothing to do with the judgment calls. It has to do with how did you adjudicate the rules.
Well, we'll try that. Yeah. I know that's the case in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think
100%.
Yeah, I think so.
But I don't think we've ever been able to get a clear answer on that. We've ever been able to talk to the officials themselves.
Yeah.
In the ACC tournament or ACC play, we always get an explanation from
a pool report.
You, well, no, I mean, from you or Percy or Brazzo. So anyway, well, I'll look into that. I guess that's something I can talk to Paul.
Yeah,
about.
No, Paul would be, you know, I'll be surprised if there's not a that's in the place already. I think back.
Here's what he's going to say. What do you need to talk to those guys for?
You know him pretty well.
Luke, why do you? You know, I'll give you an answer.
All right, I have one for you, Luke.
I'm here. Okay. Serve it up.
You know, I try to follow online some of the coaches, and it's easy to do. All you got to do is pull up ESPN, and they'll tell you who's got technicals. But, you know, Bobby Huggins got a $10,000 fine in this last week or two because he said that officials were three blind mice, which is certainly not original, but he got it out and it cost him $10,000.
That's a lot of tracksuits.
Well, you know, that's a lot of tracksuits. Of course, his are free anyway. But anyway, Ben Hallen, who coaches at Mississippi State, he got whacked for $25,000. And I don't know how much money these guys make, but I tell you what, if I got hit with $25,000, it would seriously hurt. Okay. So anyway, but his is a little unique because after the game, I don't know what team Mississippi State was playing, but he didn't take issue with the officiating publicly, but he did what most coaches do. He sent some tape to the supervisors, Mark Whitehead, and then he followed up and says, "Did you look at the plays I sent you?" And Mark Whitehead said, "I have, and I'm going to agree with you on the most critical one, the one at the end of the game that hurt, okay? And that was a clear foul, or it wasn't a clear foul, one or the other. I think it was a clear foul." So he said, "Okay, thank you." So the next thing he knows, he makes that public that he had talked to Mark Whitehead, Ben Hallen had, and the foul should have been called. Now it's out there. And the SEC has a policy that you are not allowed to make any comments about officiating, good or bad. That's off. So they hit him with $25,000. Well, when I was the supervisor, Wake Forest played NC State. And the first act, and it was not at the end of the game, and it was at the end of the game, not the last seconds, but I'm making the story long, but NC State had already put Wake Forest away. They were going to win. And a kid from Wake Forest at the free throw line clearly initiated the contact, and then the kid from State responds and pushes him to the floor. And, of course, my officials get the second action.
Always get the second guy.
They get the second guy.
You always get the second guy.
They get NC State. And they enforced it, and state wins. And I get a text from Debbie Al, who has sent me across my computer, "Did you look at the plays I sent you?" I says, in a text back to her, "I did, and my officials missed the action by Wake Forest, which initiated state responding, and we got state, and we missed it." And I thought it was the end of it until I opened up the News and Observer sports section the next day.
Thank you. Thank you for subscribing.
And there it is. John Clockerty, supervisor official, admits that the officials made a mistake. And I'm thinking to myself, is this sporting news? Is this what, when it didn't have anything to do with the outcome of the game, but we have John Clockerty's officials missed the play that means absolutely nothing to the outcome? And I'm thinking, I got duped. And that's all I got to say.
Was there a question in there? You're still salty
about
that.
Yeah,
this is going to be...
It does bother me, because I told you and I told our friend Joe that that is not news, that the officials missed a call.
You and Joe never been quite right after that.
No,
all those nice things he wrote about you.
Yeah, Joe, and I had, and because of you, and I appreciate it, we have amended those, and it's like yesterday's newspaper. It's over with.
Well, obviously, it's not. I mean, come on.
No,
you're venting. I was venting about stuff at the office today. Now you're venting on the podcast.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
I'll make sure. Well, that's good. Joe will listen just to hear what you have to say about him. So we got one.
No, it's water over the dam. It's but I know that Ben Holland kind of did the same thing. He got hit for $25,000. Debbie didn't get hit for anything.
Do you want her fined retroactively?
No, I can't. I can't. You know, I don't. What?
I'll text her right now and ask her to
please
write you a check for $25,000.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I understand, and but that's part of. You know, one of the things I say to people all the time about, I think I've said it on this podcast, the thing that sports columnists and officials have in common is we call things the way we see them, and we do our job in public, and everyone else thinks they can do a better job.
Good point. Yeah.
And that just comes with the territory. You know, I mean, I get a lot of criticism, and that's part of the job. Quite frankly, if you're an official or a sports columnist who isn't being criticized, you're probably not doing a great job, because making the correct unpopular call is a big part of both jobs. And you were never afraid of making unpopular calls.
But neither are you. I tell you, I read all of your comments.
And I'll add this. We're not always right.
No, and I read your commentary, and I told you when I thought, man, that was really good. And I do the same thing. I read the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and some of the writers up here, Ron Cook and a few others. I like to read them, and because obviously I'm a Pirate and Steeler fan and Penguins fan. But I hear you, Luke, and I tell officials when they want to get into this business, there's going to be nights that are going to be absolutely you're going to have bad nights, and you're not going to be right. And don't get into the business. Don't try to officiate unless you're ready for it, because there are a lot of good nights and a lot of good memories, but there are bad nights also, and you're going to get criticized. We have four games tonight in the ACC, 2 at 7, 1 at 8, and 1 at 9. Brian Kersey is right now saying, I don't care who wins or loses. I just hope all four go off without any problems. That's how supervisor will think, you know.
I remember working on a story a couple of years ago about ACC football and basketball officials. One of the basketball officials had told me, all I want when I come off the court is for there not to be any texts on my phone. Because I know if I screwed something up, I'm going to have 150 texts from everyone I've ever met. But if I have a good, quiet game and get everything right, nobody's going to notice.
Yeah, nobody tells.
So
right.
I know instantly when I come off the court and turn my phone on exactly how things went. And you lived in the pre-cell phone era.
Oh, yeah, but I tell you, I can remember my last year or last 2 years, Gary Williams was still coaching at Maryland.
Running the flex.
They were still in the. He always got a good shot off of that flex. But anyway, he had played a game, and I met with the referees. He lost the game. And I'm sitting there working on the second game because it's going on, and the phone lights up, and it's Gary. I said, I got to answer this. I says, Coach, he says, did you look at that? He said, that guy traveled the last possession. I says, Coach, I got to watch this game. I says, I can't talk right now. He said, no, you got to let me know what you think. And it just goes on and on. And I'm thinking, you know, it's another losing coach. They go down hard.
That's not a bad Gary Williams impression.
Oh, no, I love Gary. Everybody liked Gary. But it was probably, you know, figured he could have won that game and gotten into the championship or semifinals. But I always liked working with Gary.
When has a winning coach called you to complain?
I'm hesitating here because I've had coaches tell when I was refereeing as we came off the floor, you guys did a good job tonight. A losing coach or a winning coach, you guys did a really good job tonight, even a losing coach. But in my 11 years, I didn't have any losing coaches, Luke, let alone winning coaches call and said, well, you guys were terrific the other night. No, it's not in their makeup.
It's funny you mention that. There was something I saw I meant to ask you about last time. It was a piece on coaches' New Year's resolutions. It was either an ESPN or The Athletic or maybe Stadium. But one of the resolutions was, and I think I should look this up, but I'm going off the cuff here. I think it was Scott Drew at Baylor.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I think his New Year's resolution was to tell the officials when they're doing a good job. Like, we always complain, and fine. I mean, that's
good.
Part of the
that's
coach's
good.
Job. But I this year, I want to make sure when the officials do a good job, I want to make sure to tell them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but that is a rarity.
You know, yeah, that is. Something just came to mind. We talked about Calipari and him getting thrown out and all that. Something I do believe, that when a coach gets thrown out, I believe his team may have a calming effect on his team, believe it or not. Calipari is a screamer and a yeller. Screams at his players, you know, and he gets them fired up. And one of his assistants way back when was a guy named Bruiser Flint, who you would know at Drexel. Bruiser
Absolutely.
Was a screamer and holler.
And UMass, yeah.
You know, and at UMass, a screamer and holler. I've seen where I talked to this writer for the Lexington Herald, and he said that after Cal got thrown out, his team responded very positive, and they played really well, and they won the game. When I was the supervisor, Bruiser Flint, who was a screamer and a holler, he got tossed a couple times out at Drexel, and his team always came back and played a little bit better. And I told Bruiser that. I said, Bruiser, you know what? You don't like to get thrown out, but your team played pretty well after you got tossed. And he kind of just laughed it off. But I think that's a possibility.
I think there's sort of a crisis mentality that takes over where if you had been slacking a little bit, which usually, if a coach gets thrown out, his team's usually not. Very rarely does a coach get thrown out when his team's playing great.
On fire. That's
it
right.
happens.
That's right.
But it's rare.
Yeah, that's right. That's
you know, that you know, that's a wake-up call for everyone. You know, it's like in a professional sports team when a guy gets put on waivers. Usually that everyone lifts their game a hair.
Is that right?
Yeah, you see it in baseball. You see it in hockey or basketball. You know, like, it just puts a little fire under everyone's seat. Hmm. And I think that's the same thing that happens in college basketball. A coach gets a technical, gets another technical. You know, everyone kind of rallies around the family and
yeah.
You know, you have that bunker mentality. Now you're the underdog. Everyone's against you. Those are all useful, motivational. I mean, it's the same reason coaches will get a T. You know,
yeah.
This guy, can you believe what this guy just did? Let's go show him.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep. What else?
That's it, man. We're good.
Okay.
We're good.
We're good for the
next
time.
That's a full play.
Well, you got some secrets here that
you're dishing dirt, my man.
You got some secrets, but you know what? It's things I could say that I could never say before. 4 years out of the game, supervisor, I think I have a little more leeway now than I did one time.
Letting it all hang out.
Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Awesome. John, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Leave a rating if you've enjoyed this. A good one. If you don't, please don't.
Call if they have any questions or write.
Reach out on Twitter at Luke Decock, ldecock at newsobserver.com. Do not call under any circumstances. But we're happy to, as always, questions, comments, feedback. Stuff you want us to talk about, send clips, send plays. We'll break them down. It's fine. We got nothing better to do.
Yeah, it'd be good.
The weather's not warm enough for John to play golf, so he's got nothing to do but break down clips on his iPad. So
that's true, and I'm hoping we get some weather, decent weather. Maybe the weekend will be nice enough to play some golf.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, John. Thank you, everyone. And we'll be back with episode 25
yep.
soon.